guys and gals, we are here for another episode of The Wrap.
Another milestone episode this week.
Dun, 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 30.
Episode 30. Yeah.
Like it feels, wow, that just feels almost ancient is what it feels like.
Yeah.
But in some ways, I feel like we're just getting started.
That's right.
Is what I feel like. So 30 episodes in, somebody was just saying that we feel like we should we should have been done with season one. We should be on to season two now, but
possibly, yeah.
Just keep rolling along. This is all one season, all one volume. Just keep on going. We're writing a book.
I think
here.
Once the coronavirus goes away, we can just call that a season.
Yeah,
right.
The season of Corona. Oh yeah, boy, I tell you what. And good segue here. Let's talk about things that nobody wants to talk about.
Okay, all right.
Today we get to talk about sin. Yay! Everybody wants to just drone on about that. What they say there are things you shouldn't talk about. You shouldn't talk about politics. You shouldn't talk about religion. And probably a sub point of that, and like that, you probably shouldn't sit and talk about sin a whole lot either.
That's a good reminder for everybody for next week for Thanksgiving, right?
Yes. Don't talk about those things at the Thanksgiving table, all right? But here's the thing. I'm really convinced that probably the reason that we are in the world of hurt that we're in today is the fact that we don't recognize and talk about our sinfulness.
Right. It's like the elephant in the room. Nobody wants to be that person to bring it up, but we really need to
talk about it. And usually what we like to do is we like to point out everybody else's flaws and sins, right?
Well, of course.
But we don't like to talk
it's
about
a lot easier.
Our own. And so we started this series called The Sting, and the whole thing is set up with just really two looks at two different representatives of mankind, of humanity. And the first one we're going to talk about today is the first Adam, you know, Adam himself, all the way back in the book of Genesis, who represents us. And we understand the story. The story is old as time, about how Eve is deceived, and then by her deception, she causes Adam to sin. And by Adam sinning, it makes the entire world, all of humanity, spin into this spiral of death. And again, so I just kind of was joking when I was preaching this past Sunday that really uplifting stuff, right?
Yeah.
We get to talk about sin, we get to talk about death and disobedience. But one of the things that I said, and I don't know if you remember this or not, is that often what we want to do in life is that we want to jump to the good news and just only talk about the good news. But really what we need to do and really what needs to happen if we are to fully appreciate the gospel and what Jesus has done for us is we need to get the bad news first.
Yeah.
That bad news is pretty bad.
Yeah. The good news doesn't look as good without the bad news.
No. I also say it this way. We don't know what we've been saved from. We don't understand what we've been saved from, or we don't value what we've been saved by unless we understand what we've been saved from. Mm. And so we don't, I don't think, fully understand what Jesus did on the cross unless we understand why he had to do that.
Right.
So
right. If we think we're, sitting in a puddle and someone says, I rescued you from drowning, you're going to be like, yeah, right, But if we truly realize the depth of our issue, get it, water depth. If we truly see how deep that water is, and how deep that sin was, then we really catch the picture of, he did save me from.
Yeah. That you're not just face deep in a puddle.
Right.
You're like all the way under.
Your leagues under the sea.
There's no way you're coming out of that on your own. So what do you think is one of the main issues that we have when it comes to recognizing our sinfulness?
I think one of our main issues is we don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because seeing it is humbling. Seeing it is we have to admit there's something wrong with us, right? And I don't know anybody who really enjoys doing that, right? So for me, I'd much rather turn a blind eye to my sin and point out my someone else's sin, right? Because it's a lot easier because we don't have to, it's not personal.
Yeah.
Right? The minute we look at it in our own lives, it gets really personal.
Yeah. Once we see it, once we recognize it,
yeah.
Once we call it out, it becomes real.
Yeah.
I think sometimes...
And unfortunately, what we don't realize is even if we don't call it out and we don't look at it, it's still real. It's
still real.
Right? It's like when my dog tries to hide from us and sticks her head up underneath the bed, but her entire body's sticking out. Like, it's not helping.
No.
She thinks it is, but it's not helping.
She thinks she's hidden.
Yeah, she thinks she's gone, you know?
Made in the shade. Yeah, but it doesn't help at all. I was thinking about that and didn't really talk about it on Sunday, but you ever have that moment when you were growing up and you knew that you really messed something up? And you knew that mom and dad were about ready to bear down on you in a bad way. And you just have that moment in between doing something wrong and waiting for that punishment that is like, that's almost the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Then we go back and we think about Genesis 3, and it says that the serpent succeeds in deceiving Eve. She takes, she eats, she gives the fruit to Adam, and he takes and he eats. And it says immediately what?
Their eyes were open.
Eyes were open. They felt shame. They realized their nakedness. And in all that vulnerability, it says they hide.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we ever really think about in that moment, that one, just that split moment there when their eyes are truly opened. And that's a funny thing to me because what does a serpent say? That, oh, if you eat this, your eyes will be opened. Oh, they were open, weren't they?
Yeah.
But it was to bad news.
Yeah.
It was to shame. And just that split second there of realizing what they had lost in that moment had to be so painful. I mean, we think that, when God came to them and he banished them from the garden and they could no longer go in there and they were forced to a life of hard labor. And for the lady, she was, for Eve, she was, given pain in childbirth. Like, that is all, like, really bad stuff for sure. But I think really the most painful moment was that moment of, like, oh no.
We've made a mistake.
What do we do? I mean, again, it's the same thing that we feel like as we were growing up as kids, when we knew that we did something wrong, we really messed up, like, just waiting for that punishment is, like, punishment enough.
Yeah.
It's really not a good feeling at all. And they have that in that moment. But, yeah, again, this concept of why do we have such a hard time of recognizing and calling out our sinfulness. And God, and there really is no mistake, is there, right? As you read the entire Bible, God does not pull punches when he talks about the lostness and the sinfulness of humanity.
Right. Well, and the complete, like, it's not just one or two of us, right? Like, everybody.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking, we were doing a Bible study, talking about this concept and this idea of the beginning of everything in Genesis. And so you have Genesis 3, the fall of mankind. What do you get in Genesis 4? You get Cain and Abel, don't you, right?
You see things starting to bear out.
Oh, you're just like, well, maybe you're like, well, maybe it was just these two. Maybe these two were the ones that messed it up. No. Because the very next chapter, we get Cain and Abel. Don't know what the length of time is there of what happens, but it does, you're missing the point. The point is served in the fact that the very next chapter, Cain and Abel. And
then you get first murder, right?
First murder. Yeah. Get to Genesis chapter 6. What's the story in Genesis chapter 6? Is a story of Noah.
Yeah.
And God says very blatantly, he looks over the earth and he finds that there's not a single righteous, that everybody only ever does evil.
Yeah.
And so what does he have to do?
That's a pretty scathing review.
That's one of the most scathing reviews of all of humanity.
Yeah.
I got to wipe this slate clean. Only people that are going to survive this are Noah and his family, and they will carry things on. And we think to ourselves, don't we? Like, surely, as you read, if you can just imagine yourself reading this for the first time, surely he has wiped out all of humanity. They've had to have learned their lesson. Genesis chapter 6, that is. What do we get by Genesis chapter 11?
Babel.
Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to make ourselves...
We just went, right back to... Yeah.
It's like, no, we will never learn. And this is the one thing that I think is so tempting to us. And this is really what a lot of this story in Genesis... is surrounded by, is we have a tendency to say this. Well, how fair is it that God would choose one person to represent all of humanity? Mm. And he messes up, and because he messes up, I've messed up. how is that fair? And the concept goes into Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5 gives this compare and contrast between Adam and then Christ himself, the second Adam.
Right. And so we'll get to next week.
Yes, what we're going to talk about next week. That's the other side of the story here. But we have Adam, and it says, in this one man, all of humanity has sinned. The technical name for this is what Paul is talking about, and what was known in Paul's day, it was called federal headship. And we say things like, not fair. But we realize at the same time that we operate from the position of federal headship in almost every part of our society. Yeah. That's what our presidency is based on. That's what labor unions are based on. We pick a union rep to go and to represent us to the employers.
Right.
We use the same thing in our legal system. That's why we have lawyers who are powers of attorney who speak on our behalf and represent us with their knowledge. And so we like it in all those areas. Well, maybe not so much in like politics or whatever. We're not going to go. We're not going to get into that, right?
If you follow it too closely, that analogy falls apart. But
yes,
I get
does.
Where you're going. Yeah, yeah.
But most of the time, we like it when it's convenient.
Right.
But when it's not convenient, and as it is in the case of Adam, we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm convinced a lot of that has to do with the fact that we in our world, especially in our Western culture in America, operate from a mindset of, I make my own decisions. Mm-hmm. Nobody makes those for me.
Yeah.
I represent myself.
Well, yeah. While we do have representation, the Western mindset is, if I don't like that representation, I can change it.
Exactly.
Right?
I can change that out if I want to.
Right.
But that doesn't work as it does with Genesis 3 and what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 5. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Because Adam has sinned, we are born into that, and we have all sinned because of Adam's sin. And we can look at that and we say, that's not fair, that's not right, that's really bad news. I would contend that it's actually the best news ever. And what we do, let me just step back a minute before I kind of go into that, is how offensive is it, Levi, that we would say to God, you know what? Adam was a pretty bad representative. And God would say, oh, really? Because I'm the one who created Adam.
Yeah.
And actually, Adam was the best shot for humanity.
He was the one that wasn't tainted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it still fell apart. And we would often say, you know, I've heard this before in a lot of different ways. Well, if I were there in the garden, things would have been different. Yeah, you're right. They probably would have been different because you probably would have fallen even sooner than Adam did.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's offensive. I think it's untrue for us to say, if I was there, things would have been different. God, couldn't you have done better than this? No, like that was God. He created Adam specifically to be the pinnacle and the representation of all humanity. And in his own free will, Adam's own free will and his choice, it all fell apart.
Yeah.
So I said this in this line I want to kind of come back to. The fact that Adam represents us and is our federal head, and again, this idea of federal headship, is the best news that we could ever have. Could you maybe think about why that would be the best news possible?
Because Jesus, coming on the scene, could represent all of humanity.
Absolutely.
Right? It's a covenant, right?
Yeah.
So Jesus cut covenant with God on our behalf, left us out of the deal, right?
You guys just sit over there.
It's basically God cutting covenant with himself, right? On behalf of us.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have that type of representation, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'll say it this way. The very same thing that cursed us is the very same thing that saves us. The thing that Adam couldn't do, Christ did.
Right.
And that's why I think it is the best news ever. Like I said, we're going to talk about that a little bit more next week as we kind of look at the other side of the story and what Christ has done for us and what he has defeated in sin and in death. But I think that we have to almost play the whole thing out. It's like, yeah, that seems a little unfair. It seems like a raw deal.
Yeah.
But actually, in God's wisdom,
it's part of redemption,
and in God's plan, that's exactly what he wanted to happen. Yeah. I mean, like, I shouldn't say it that way. This isn't exactly what he wanted to happen. It's like, oh, sweet, I'm going to create a man and I want him to fall and I want him to sin. No, he didn't want that.
Right. But he...
I believe he knows that's going to happen, but he has to allow that to happen for there to be free will and for there to be choice. And I think that, again, is so important, because if you understand what Jesus says about his going to the cross and dying, what is the one thing that he says that is so very important about his death on the cross? He says, nobody takes my life from me. What?
I give it freely.
I give it freely, voluntarily. I make that choice to be a sacrifice for all of humanity. So again, the very same free will and free choice that we often like lament and say, oh, why? Why were we given free? Why in the world would God put a tree at the middle of the garden?
Yeah.
Is the very same thing that saves us, because by Jesus coming down to this earth, being born as a man, living as a man, yet not sinning, we have the hope of eternal life.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, so many times I think, you know, when we think about the fact of, wow, why did God give Adam the choice, right? Why on earth would he do that? Knowing that Adam full well could and did, you know, choose to disobey.
That's what's so phenomenal to me, but is in the garden that God does that. He places him there with the risk of choice.
But I think the beautiful part of it is, you know, we often look at it as an equation, right? Well, if we don't have the bad stuff in there, then everything is good. But for Adam not to have that choice, it would have just been a very transaction-like...
Robotic is what I always call it, yeah.
It wouldn't be a relationship with God like God wanted. I mean, you look at what God did with Adam, and he walked with him in the cool of the day.
Yeah.
Just God, because he had to. He wanted to spend time
God
with
doesn't
him,
want
right?
transactions with right. us. He wants a relationship with us. Then when transactions between us, he wants a relationship with us.
So it all sounds really good to have no choice.
Yeah.
But with that choice comes that relationship.
Yeah. And here's what I often say, because I'll hear people say as well too, again, the question I just asked is, why in the world would God put a tree in the middle of the garden? It almost seems like God is taunting, you know, Adam.
Yeah. You like, can't have it.
But
you know?
Exactly. That's what we often think. Yeah. You can't
have
this.
Well, that's how Satan spun it, right?
Yep.
God's just trying to keep this from you.
He's trying to keep this from you. You can't have anything. But really, the story says this, what in Genesis 2? You can eat of any tree in the garden freely.
Yeah.
But that
and
one.
I liked how in your sermon last weekend, if you haven't listened to it, take a listen to it. But you talked about, we often forget that there was two trees that God put in the middle of the garden.
Yep.
There was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and
which is
the
what
tree
we
of life.
Which is what we usually focus on, is the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the thing that God keeps from us.
But the tree of life was there too.
Yeah.
And so what would have been that? How would it played out had they taken and eaten of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you're right. We like to focus on, well, we can't do this, and we can't do that. You know, even sometimes in our zeal to be religious, that's what we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this.
But what can you do?
But what can you do?
All of this.
Yeah.
You can have all of this. Just don't do that.
Yeah.
And again, it really is set up as much of the Bible is set up is a test of obedience.
It is. Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's what we'll go back to is God doesn't want from us just things done out of duty.
Yeah.
Or diligence. He wants it out of devotion, out of love towards him. And he's got to put things again, scripture is abundantly clear that God does not tempt us, but I do believe that there are tests along the way.
Yeah.
And he's just saying, where is the heart? And what do we need to do to correct the heart in this so that you will be obedient to me? You'll be devoted to me. And so I think that's kind of the sticking point and the revelation of this whole story here is we live in God's kingdom, and it's a kingdom of what I call lavishness.
Yeah.
But we so often focus on the little nitpicky thing that we can't have.
That's human nature, isn't it?
Like, it is.
I find myself doing that with any area of life.
Like, you know, like I've got all this stuff, but I don't have this one thing.
I would be happy if I had this one thing. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so I think that again, that speaks to the necessity of us to have free will and free choice. That plays into the story of Jesus coming to this earth in his incarnation, in his his taking on humanity, that he also operates the very same thing. He has to make choices every day of his life. He has to make the biggest choice of all time. Do I die on this cross or do I try to bypass this cross? Yeah. I'm going to this cross. And nobody put me there. It was my choice.
Yeah. Even his last dying breath was, it is finished.
It is finished. This is what I've come.
Gave up his spirit.
Yep, this is what I have come to do. It is finished. The work is finished. It is done. The word there is the Greek word tetelestai. It comes from the Greek word telos, which means the end, the goal, the chief end and goal. And that's what Jesus is saying there. Father, I have come, and I've been a servant, and I've come to the end. I've reached the goal for what you sent me to do, which was to be obedient,
right,
and was to die on this cross, to make this choice for the redemption of humanity. And that's, like I said, what we'll talk about next week as we kind of spin things a little bit and talk about death being defeated, death being overcome because of the victory of Christ and the victory of the cross. And so we hope that you will join us next time as we talk about that. We know that, you know, today is like a little bit of like kind of gloomy, heavy kind of stuff.
We've tried to kind of pepper in some of that good news.
Yeah, we've tried to kind of sprinkle some good stuff in there, which is a lot luckier than the congregation was on Sunday, because I pretty much just kind of...
There was no peppering in there.
There was no peppering until the very end when I gave just a little bit of a smidge of that glimmer of light there. It is. It's a very deep, it's a very tough, it's a very gloomy, it's a very dark and kind of heavy topic. But again, we need bad news first before we appreciate and understand good news. So we hope, like I said, that you will join us next time as we talk about the victory of the cross and Christ defeating death. And there's a lot more in that than we would realize. And so we hope, like I said, you will join us next time. But until we get together next time, we hope that you are well and God bless to you.
See you guys.